Wait, wait, stop. That's the one. Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story, and tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not. As you may have guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show. Today we have a guest. His name is Ruben Ortiz. He is a former Jehovah's Witness. He is also a co-host of Nobody Asked Us to Do This podcast, which is a podcast as well as a Facebook group. And I was very intrigued with his podcast, hence me asking him to be on my podcast so he can tell us about what who he is, what he does, what's his journey, and why. So please help me welcome Ruben Ortiz to the show. Welcome, Ruben.
Yeah, thank you. That was a great introduction.
Yeah, totally. So please tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Oh, who I am and what I do. I'm just a dude, man. I'm just a guy. I'm normal, everyday person, work, and I have a son. He's 9 years old. I was born in New York. And I was raised in kind of like half and half, half East Coast, half West Coast. I lived in the East Coast till I was about 13 and then moved to California. And I lived a total of 29 and then came back. And I've been back in the East Coast ever since. And I was raised a Jehovah's Witness from the age of 6 years old. And I left around the age 27.
Wow, so you have a taste of both East and West. Like, how is that like culture-wise?
Culture-wise, it's interesting. In general, the West Coast is they're very chill. And growing up there in my formative years gave me this martial demeanor that the fast pace of the East Coast, being born in New York, having to go visit there with my dad, and just in general, out here, it's a lot different. It's a lot better. I always say that the people are a little bit more genuine out here in the East Coast. I mean, you know where you stand in California. You know, there's a lot of people who are cool and chill and very nice. But your enemies, you don't really know who they are till later. It's just a different vibe, you know. But I always carry that California vibe, that chill vibe everywhere I go in my life, because my favorite thing is to be a peaceful person, and that's what I strive for.
That's awesome, and definitely I feel that vibe, and whenever I speak to you, I feel relaxed, and I feel, how you call it, welcome to talk to you about anything.
Thank you.
And that's a great character to have. Like some people, you know, some people, even in person or online, you feel hesitant and you're not sure where they stand or et cetera. But you, it feels very open. And I love the energy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's funny because it's funny that, you know, how we're perceived differently by different people. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's really cool that you can feel that. I feel energy from you too. Like, you're a very nice person, very chill person. I see your posts. You know, and it's to somebody, you know, but you know, to one person you're chill and relaxed, and to somebody else you might rub them the wrong way. And you're the enemy, you know.
Right. But
that's life in general. That's everywhere.
Yeah, so. Totally. Yeah, definitely. Speaking of that, I don't want to say I think, because I know who I am. However, I welcome people to tell me who they perceive me to be as well. And people tend to tell me good things until I have boundaries. Then I'm not so much of a nice person. So I've noticed.
That's interesting, because that's kind of like, right, you draw a line and you put some boundaries, or you may express something that somebody might not like, and they might feel that, well, they might take that personal, you know, and that happens.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? You are who you are, and you have your boundaries, and that's a very important thing. Having those boundaries keeps that peace in your life, you know, and keeps the bad juju, maybe.
Right.
But maybe to one person's bad juju is another person's, you know, paradise. So,
right.
You know, as long as you're content, and it doesn't mean that you hate the other person, or you don't have to see eye to eye to be at peace with other people. You don't have to be their friends to be at peace with other people. They can do their own thing over there, and you can disagree, and then they're going to do their thing. Doesn't mean you have to be, it's not like when we're Jehovah's Witnesses, right, where you're obligated, you know, you got to fix your problem with that person, that's your brother. It's a lot easier because you see eye to eye and everything, but it's kind of like fly to eye.
Right.
You know, like,
agreed.
This is what you believe, so boundaries are all the same.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting challenge when you leave that organization, that mindset, where you have to, like, go through this process of, like, oh, wait a minute. I'm at the center of everything.
And I've took that with me, too. I've discovered maybe 5 years ago that I was codependent and a people pleaser. So I tend to say, that's another topic, but I tend to say there are two kinds of people. I believe that 85% of people grow, and the rest are able to change. And changing is not popular or easy as growing, because I can still feel all the old, good or bad, I don't like to say bad stuff, but like all the things that are no longer serving me right inside of me, but every day I have to work toward them to overcome them. Like a codependency, I don't want to call myself codependency anymore, but I would say I used to be that, and I'm growing every day. Like, because sometimes with a person or situation, it comes up and I have to remind myself to not go along with it or not. So that's the thing I think I've taken. I don't know if it was from being JW or not, but like with the people pleasing, as you say, is something that I've carried on most of my life until 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, growth or change or however you name it is in life. And I mean, I'm certainly not the same person I was 10 years ago. I think I rubbed, I would say things and engage in back and forth. Doesn't serve you anything, you know. The one thing you learn is each person is gonna do what they're gonna do. You can present something to somebody, you present something or some insight. You could set a boundary. You could say, hey, you know, this is not cool. Well, somebody's knocking on my door. Hold on, give me a second.
Yes, totally.
What's this?
It says Jehovah's Witness.
Sorry about that.
Now I was going to say, it's a holiday. It's a Jehovah's Witness. Don't open. Jehovah's Witnesses are tricky. They'll go to your back door.
What were we talking about? Oh, growth and change. Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, those are different versions of yourself. You either grow or stay the same. And I'm for growing and changing and learning and improving. There's always from now, I'm gonna be like, oh my god, I'm 45 now. 10 years from now, I'll be 55, and I'll be like, I was an idiot. And then, and 10 years from then, I'll be like, oh my god, I was 55, I was born. And then it'll just continue to do that until you die.
I totally can see that going for me. Yes.
I feel that that's the flow of life. You know.
Yeah.
You're like, damn it.
Well, it's a good thing because it makes you aware of what's happening. Because some people aren't aware of change or happenings of life. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it also keeps you humble and, you know that there's going to be things that you need to work on. And it's always good.
Right. So what made you change from being a journalist to do now who you are now? What happened? Tell us the story.
Oh my god, that's a long story. I'll keep it really short. We left the Jehovah's Witnesses. I was in the shit where I was in a bad marriage. I was living in California, and I was always one of those Jehovah's Witnesses that were kind of like, in a sense, popular, you know, with everybody. And I was a ministerial servant. My ex-wife and I were very bad. And of course, number one. 24, when I got married, 19, basically, we're kids, you know?
Right.
And culturally very different, because I was raised in the States, she was even she came here, got married, and culturally, even though we're in a Spanish congregation, and we both spoke Spanish, but the cultures are very different. I'm Puerto Rican, she was Mexican, I was raised here, she was raised there, very much more conservative down there than it was where I was at. So we didn't get along, and ultimately she cheated on me. Long story short, which, by the way, I can't even blame her, because we were so miserable and there was no other way out. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. Out of desperation, she met somebody, she went with that person. But I still continue trying to be a witness, but there was a part of me that always liked to have fun as a witness. I used to be at parties every weekend, Jehovah's Witness parties, stuff like that. And I kind of always, like, knew where the line was. You know, I didn't break the rules, but I was always kind of like, you know, like, oh, I could do this. I drink, but I'm not getting drunk. Stuff like that. I encountered somebody that I used to date, and we hooked up, and I sat at the edge of the bed, and I felt no guilt. Absolutely no guilt. And that made me question everything. I was like, wait a minute, why don't I feel guilt? Do I really believe in this? Like, I don't know. I didn't understand why I didn't feel guilt until later on, where I figured out that things that had happened in the organization and throughout time, where I always had some kind of doubt, but it's kind of pushed subconsciously in the back of my mind. And once I did that, I knew that if I stayed, keep going to the congregation, if I stayed going to the meetings, I wouldn't be able to figure it out. So I decided to take a break, and I started doing things, just living kind of like a double life for a little bit, maybe like a few months, where I would go to one meeting every once in a while, another part, show my face, hang out with my Jehovah's Witness friends, but I was doing stuff that I was supposed to. One day I hooked up with a Jehovah's Witness girl. She went and told on herself. And I came home, and she was sitting in my living room, because I live with a roommate, and there was these other Jehovah's Witnesses. She's crying, and they're consoling her, and she's like, you're a hypocrite.
Oh my god.
you were a hypocrite, this and this and that. I was like, what? What is this? So I went to the, I decided to go to the congregation and to tell them what happened, you know, like, you know what? I might as well just say it. But I had a conversation with a friend. And if you listen to my podcast, I don't know if you listen to the episode where I talked to Jashana. But Jashana was the person that was a cousin of my roommates. And we're like family. We grew up together. She's technically my fourth cousin, according to 23andMe. anyway, so I was telling her about this whole stuff. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I just felt, you know, I feel like a hypocrite. I really have my doubts, but I feel like a hypocrite. So I might as well get through with it and just go tell them. Then she's like, why? The organization is like Big Brother. She was talking about the TV show. But in my mind, I made the connection to Big Brother. And boom, right there I woke up. I saw a flash of light. I sat down. I was like, oh my God, it is Big Brother. It's just like that. I knew that, but it just took somebody to say it. Yeah. And from that moment on, it was done. I was never the same. It was waking up out of a trance and realizing, like, oh my God, I've been brainwashed this whole time, somewhat. So that is how I woke up.
So would you say you were not? Were you zealous, or what's the percentage from 1 to 10 where you deep in? Knee deep into being a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh wow! it depends on my life. When I was a teenager, I think I was my friends would joke and call me Bible Boy because I would like quote Watchtowers and stuff. When we're dealing with stuff. I'm like, oh, we can't do that because you know the Watchtower. This and that. I would say in teenage years maybe a 7, but after that, I believed in it. But I believed in it. My mother raised me in a way where the focus wasn't on, like, you're going to be dead or you're going to be destroyed. My mother raised me, like, Jehovah loves us, Jehovah's love, you know, like, love your brothers, forgiveness, patience, the fruit of the Spirit. Like, those are the things my mother always focused on when she was teaching me, like, Watchtower stuff. So when I grew into a young adult, I became a minister servant at 20. They named me minister servant at 20. I didn't like be home and once I was there, that was kind of how I was focused on. So I would say that I was zealous like that. I wasn't like a regular pioneer or anything, but I believed in doing good to other people, and I felt like being a Jehovah's Witness was a way of being a good person. But also, I liked to have fun. Okay. So I would say 6. In zealousness, belief. Well, I believed in Jehovah, but there was always. Like, it's hard to talk about it now because now hindsight, you know, hindsight's 20/20. In it, you don't realize that it was kind of the belief was there, but then there was another side of you that realized a lot of stuff was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. In 1995, they did a generation change, right? They changed the definition of generation. They've done this several times. But when I was in, the first time they did it, that was for a long time, was in 1995 when they said that this generation shall not pass. That meant the generation meant the people living contemporaneously at the time. Instead of meaning 1914, it meant the contemporaneously at the time of the end, which was one of the first changes that while I was on this, they did on that.
Right.
And I would tell my friends, I knew they were going to do that. And I'm like, because I always tell them, like, at some point, they're going to have some new light because they're dying. Like, these people that were born 1914 are going to die pretty soon. So they're going to have to. And when they did it, I was like, see, I knew it. But I mean, I knew it because I knew that the doctrine wasn't going to work later. So, in a way, that was one of my things that I would be like, that's kind of weird. I had other things that I had issues with as well that were beliefs that they had, but I would always try to be like, you know, they'll figure it out. Leave it in Jehovah's hands. So,
yeah.
I guess. Who am I?
They'll come up with something.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned, like, specifically, did you stop being Jehovah's Witness for something specific, or was it like all these things happening? What is that word would be called? Adultery or fornication? I don't know.
Fornication? No, it wasn't a fornication. I could have went back and said, yes, I'm sorry, and then confessed and then try to be a Jehovah's Witness again. It was really waking up to the realization that they're a cult. Like, okay. Literally, that was what brought me out.
All right. Makes sense. So, yeah. Listening to your podcast, you mentioned that why was it important for you to write a letter or dissociate yourself? What was that important to us?
Oh, I didn't want to be counted as one of them, knowing that they're false, which is kind of like a weird word now because my worldview is so, like, gray. Uh-huh. But they are a very controlling religion. So, me realizing that I didn't want to be counted as one of them. I didn't want them to say, we have so many publishers and me being in that number. my actions said something. I'm like, why would somebody that's been invested and was a servant and loved the congregation and loved the people in it all of a sudden not want to be recognized as one? Right. No matter what you say, that kind of plays something psychological. And that's why I think one of the reasons they changed it from announcing this association and this fellowship differently to just announcing it the same. Because when you're disassociated, you didn't get kicked out. You kicked yourself out. And that in itself is a statement.
One word or one sentence, like, what is so wrong about them that you would want to dissociate yourself beside them being a cult? Like, can they ever redeem themselves, you think, as a religion? Are they actually the truth and they just make mistakes, or are they just like totally wrong? To do this, and why is it nobody asked us to do this in specific term? Like, what does that mean, and why did you start the group?
Well, the group initially was Exodus Witness Recovery Group 3, which started on MySpace in 2006, and then we went to Facebook, and then the group ended. I ended the group in 2018, and I shut it down. And then talking to Joe later on, the group was a lot of work, and it took a toll, the admins and out of people who were helping run the group, like moderators, things like that. So I stopped the group, and it was a great run, but I wanted to do something different. And talking with my friend Joe, my other co-host, we were like, why don't we do a podcast? So we started setting it up. I changed the ex-Jehovah's Witness Recovery Group to Nobody Asked Us to Do This, to the podcast group. And I announced that I was going to do a podcast. Now, somebody came in there and was like, oh, look at group. Is all he wants. Hey, you know, like somebody that was not fond of me. I was going to say haters, but let's just say not fond of me.
Sure.
Is a better way of saying it. So somebody that wasn't fond of who I was and what I would do because of past issues said, oh, look at group. No, nobody asked you to do this. Nobody asked you to do a podcast. And I told Joe, and I'm like, bro, this guy gave us a perfect name. I mean, literally nobody asked us to do this. Why not just call it that? And voila. Something that was meant to be negative, we turned it into something positive. And
awesome.
It's not a lie. Nobody asked us to do this.
Yeah.
So.
And I love how you say not hater, just someone who's not fond of you, because I'm going to start using that term, not fond of you. When somebody's not fond of me and they post something on my wall or even DM me to say the worst things, I turn it into not holding myself, so money, but not figuratively. And then they're purpose to break me down, build me up so much higher because I saw a different perception or a different side of what they were saying. So I love it. Nobody asks you to do this. You're doing it for your own good-willing kind of a thing. And you're helping people. And so I love that. And which leads to how is the group has had people listening to it or the podcast and being on the group? How have the group helped in the podcast?
Has it helped? I think we use it to, I use it to promote the podcast. I think we get more engagement from, you know, posting it. We do get engagement and listeners from there, but also we have an Instagram page, and we also do a little, we do some ads every once in a while. We have a fan page as well that we post it on, and we post it to different groups. When we post a link to do episodes in different groups. So it does help. I don't know to what extent. A lot of times I'll post about the podcast in there and some people react, but people tend to engage more when you're asking them questions about their experiences and themselves. So it's basically a way to have people interact and say and share about themselves, but also, hey, we're here. And listen to our podcast. But it does, we do have, you know, post some stuff every once in a while. But the focus is more on the podcast.
Well, when I listen to it, their podcast is different. And yours is like, it's focused, but it's also different. Each podcast has, it's hard to explain. It's like you have one, but then the topic is so big that it makes it curious to listen to the next. Which I like that. Other people's podcast is focused on a topic, and every week is still the same topic. Eventually, you get bored. If I can. Right. Yeah, and I love those quiz too. It makes me like.
We need to make the quiz again. I haven't done the quiz in a while. Well, you know, I'm glad you noticed that because one thing that Joe and I speak about, we want it to be like a conversation, number one, like we're having right now, which is more interesting. Also, we want to show stories that are varied. You have a guest that was a ministerial servant and now is a woman. And we promoted that and we're like, she was a ministerial servant and you should have seen the people. What do you mean that's impossible? This is for the podcast. This is not possible. This is for the podcast. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, listen to the podcast. She's transgender. Listen to the podcast. I didn't want to give it away, but some people were so adamant. I'm like, just go.
I mean, it makes sense because you're still thinking in old Jehovah's Witness mind. Because when I listened to that podcast, I was shocked too, as if it's impossible to happen. But I should know it is possible.
It is possible, right? And then also, like, you know, we had the episode with Karama, growing up African American, and Jehovah's Witness. What was that like? There's so much. That there are so many other stories now. What we like to show is that there's not just one type of, because if you look at a lot of the media, it's all focused on, a lot of it, not all, but a lot of it is focused on, you know, the child abuse, which is not to say that that's not important focus, because that is super important, right. You know, and that should be out there, you know, but there's a lot of people talking about that. There's a lot of people talking about disfellowshipment. There's a lot of people talking about those big ones, you know, those big tragic, traumatic things. And yeah, we talk about the trauma that somebody went through as well. But also there's people that me and Joe, where Joe was raised real strict, right? And he has communication with his parents still and his family. My dad wasn't a Joe's Witness. My mom is Joe's Witness. She'll talk to me if I talk to her, but it's not a lot, but there is some communication. So it's not everybody is going through the same exact experience. So we kind of want to showcase that, you know?
Nice.
Look at what this person did. This person is completely shut. We had Cliff Henderson on, Fifth, and his family completely shuts. But he's doing something artistically and something that's very healing. And it's very healing to other people, but creating some music. So each story, we want to show the different shades of Joe's Witnesses so that somebody can go on there and can relate. They can relate.
and those groups are very helpful. Although I do not engage so much. In the beginning, I used to engage, and I noticed a little funny. So I just read things, and I tend to not comment anymore. But helped me in a way of seeing the different XJWs. Because funny thing, as you mentioned, with some people who say, oh, it wasn't me, I didn't have that experience, etc. Me personally, of course, being Jehovah's Witness, I had a blinders like a horse. But my personal life, I would say it was a 10/10. Like, I was zealous, I believed in it, it was great. And so all these experiences that I've read online were shockers to me. The racism was shocking. The sexism was shocking, the this and that, and I'm glad I have an open mind to. I was shocked, but then validate people's experiences that weren't mine. And when my sisters tell me they were, I not that I couldn't believe it, like telling them they're wrong, but it was just mind-blowing because my experience was so different. So it's very important for people to understand that you may have an experience, but someone else's experiences, even in the same house, is very different than yours. Because I lived in a house where the elder my sisters, and I was in that house and I had no idea. So yeah, so anyone who's like either engaging or not, who are reading still, that could probably help them, because that's what it did for me to see different aspect of things, even I don't engage in comments.
Yes, yeah, I call those the we used to call them in the groups, we used to call them the lurkers.
Yeah, lurkers.
Yeah,
Wish, I wanted to ask you, what are the different types of XJW? You explained it on your podcast, and can you explain that to your... Because I never heard those before, and I'm like, which one am I? Which one am I?
Oh, the PMO, the POMO, the, oh God, those things. Yeah, physically in, mentally out, the physically out, mentally in, the physically in, mentally in. Those are Joe's witnesses. There's so many different disclosure people, not disclosure people that no longer believe, disclosure people that believe. It's so many, so many. I mean, I think that's, those are off the top of my head.
Okay, so what did it for me is, subliminally throughout the years, I didn't know until hindsight later on, I find out my mother is bipolar, she has DPD, and a narcissist, but I diagnosed her, of course, later on, and my dad was basically socially, probably a wrong term to use, but you'll understand, like socially, men wear pants and women do not in the church, and he was the one wearing the skirt kind of thing, and she wore the pants, in a sense of explaining like that. So I've noticed how anything she said goes, but in the Bible, it says differently, as you know. And they were hypocrites, and she would... I don't want to out anyone, but this is a raw podcast, but I'm not saying her name. Do government thing, and I think you mentioned... I'm not sure if it was... Because I'm listening to another podcast, XJW, mentioned how people, since they're not promoted to go to school, they fall into the government system, and she did those things. So growing up, I was like, that's so hypocritical, and that's thieving. And yeah, so that's one, a little part of it. But what did it for me entirely? I went to another congregation because I was like pretty zealous, popular and things like that. And I was traveling with some elders, going to some other congregation. And my dad did not teach me how to groom. And so my congregation, I guess since I grew up with them, since young, it wasn't a problem. But then an elder who was the big elder says, he called me worldly for looking the way I looked. And then he said he would not allow in his congregation and I need to clean myself. It was a dagger in my heart because I was like zealous. I was preaching like full-time job and it was my thing. And I was like, how could that person say that? And I talked to him about it and he's like, I don't know what he's talking about. So they have two different drastic opinions. And I guess the elder is biased, and since I grew up with him, he knows me. And the other elder just judged me like that. And then I would say a couple months later, I gradually faded. And one day I just changed my number and never looked back, never wrote any letter. I just forgot them in my life. And that interaction, I remembered as it happened yesterday. And it seems very little. It seems like a little thing. But to me, it was so huge, which was weird.
No, I mean, everybody's different, right? Like, you faded away. That's my, that's, that's one of my theories and or hypotheses, whatever you want to call it. When I was trying to decide what to do, I knew, even as a Jehovah's Witness, I knew that if I'm having this kind of doubts, I'm not going to figure this out being inside. I knew that being inside, somehow I knew that if I stayed, keeping going to the congregation, it would just not allow me to see things objectively. You have to step out of it. You fading away, you know, like that for a lot, that it opens your eyes to other things. It opens your eyes to who you are. You step away from it. They constantly have to drill that stuff in your head. That's why it's year in, year out, they repeat the same thing. There's a reason for that, because without that repetition, it's not going to stick. That's why people who aren't in, they end up doing stuff when they don't go to the congregation for a while or whatever. They end up doing stuff that they're not allowed to, because the repetition, the programming isn't there. You're constantly going 3 times a week, whatever. Going to meetings, going preaching, reading books, this and that. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to keep people engaged and to be a witness. But it's still not enough, because their retention rate is awful. They have a 35% retention rate or something like that. I mean, most people who grow up witnesses don't stay. And
interesting.
Yeah,
I thought they would.
That's why I always tell people who like leave the organization and they're like, "Oh, I lost all my friends." I'm like, you know what? Wait some years. You'll get some back. Like, I have people in my life that aren't even involved in groups or NGOs, Witness podcast or NGOs, Witness anything. But I knew them as Jehovah's Witnesses. They're just not Jehovah's Witnesses anymore. All you have to do is wait. You leave the Jehovah's Witnesses, 10 years later, you'll have a few friends back. Guaranteed.
Right.
It's a numbers game. They can't keep them all.
That's funny.
And in this age of information where they're kind of half forced to use the internet, but then police to use the internet, you can have the internet on your wrist, on a phone. You know, like, you can have the internet right there on your fingertips. Not only the phone, you can have it on a watch. You just go, boop, boop, Jehovah's Witnesses. You can't keep people in like you could before.
Right.
You know? So.
How involved are you in aiding groups of ex-Jehovah's Witness? And what is the difference, as in community-wise, what is the difference in the group being, where you are Jehovah's Witness and not being Jehovah's Witness? How are you involved with the ex-JWs?
I ran the recovery group for like many years, and I would go to meetups every once in a while. But lately, it's not too much anymore. The extent that I'm involved is just posting things to the podcast group, doing podcast episodes with Betsy and Joe, and occasionally doing meetups. I did do a meetup not long ago, because we had the episode that was the premiere of Witness on the Ground. So I went to the premiere and I met Scott, who directed the movie, and Ryan, who starred in the movie. And we watched and we got together afterwards, and I met some XAWs and some people that I've made friends with over the years that were there as well, but not as much anymore. But you want to know what's the difference?
Yeah, because what I've noticed is, and correct me, just my perception, and please tell, I think you're more involved than me. I've noticed is they came out of a group or control group or cult Jehovah's Witness, and they go online becoming a new kind of control group of being ex-Jehovah's Witness.
You know how many times I got called an elder over the years? You're an elder. You have rules in your group. You have opinions. You know, listen, one thing is leaving the Jehovah's Witnesses, right?
Right.
Because of doctrine and knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing are those processes and how we process things, and how our brain works, and that programming, that does not go away right away, right? So, a lot of times, when people are fresh out, whatever new beliefs they have, whatever way of thinking they may have, sometimes it comes off as just as zealous. They get involved in something else just as zealous as they were when they were Jehovah's Witnesses, and they don't realize that it's just the same process, just replacing something. You're not really, you're just interchanging one thing for another. So they can come, that could come off that way.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes another thing, people confuse, like what you said at the beginning, that's one thing that happens, right? Another thing that happens is that maybe the person has boundaries now, like you said at the beginning, and then you set those boundaries, and then they look at those boundaries as restrictive, or they look at those boundaries as, well, now you're
Yeah.
You know, it's you gotta understand, these people have been controlled their whole lives. So somebody coming in and saying, "Hey, you know, this is not cool. Oh, you know, who are you to tell me what to do?" You know what I mean?
Right.
Who are you to tell me what to do? I can do whatever I want. I'm free. You know? Yeah, we're free. That doesn't mean that somebody else might not be okay with that. Like, we don't walk into somebody's house and be like, "Well, this is how I'm free, so I can do whatever I want." I mean, you're visiting somebody. Like, I'm like, "Hey, can you not like do that in my house?" "No, I can do whatever I want." Yeah, that's what.
Right.
I'm free. You're like, "No, you well, you can, but like, there's consequences." And that's another big lesson that you learn when you leave the organization. Like, just because you leave an organization, you can do whatever you want, doesn't mean that your consequences, you know, they do. That remains the same. Like, you can do whatever you want, but just if you punch someone in the face, don't be surprised if they punch you back.
Right.
If you insult somebody, don't expect them not to insult you back. You know, you're if you're infringing on somebody else's freedom, don't expect them to say, "Go f*** yourself."
Right.
You know what I mean?
How connected are you with XJWs compared to when you were Jehovah's Witness? Is it stronger, or do you feel more at home being XJW and have XJW friends, do you feel more at home when you were a Jehovah's Witness?
More at home, like
as in like, friendship wise,
deeper friendships.
Right.
I have deep friendships with ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, and I had deep friendships with Jehovah's Witnesses when I was Jehovah's Witness, and they both feel deep. In connection. Sometimes as a Jehovah's Witness, your friendship would change and you wouldn't be as tight anymore. That happens the same thing, and that's just life. Mm-hmm. Well, the only difference is that you can lose a friend for a decision you make to not comply with the religion. Mm-hmm. Once you make that decision, then that friendship is over.
Right.
So it's conditional. Now some people are like, "Oh, I enjoy unconditional friendships and love." I don't believe that. I personally don't think any relationship is unconditional. If you have a kid and he becomes an evil dictator and kills people, like, you can't be like, "My love for my son is unconditional." Like, there's how big the conditions are. How would I say that? The conditions slippery and so little as a belief. You know what I mean? You're shunning your child for having a belief, but they're still a good person. That's fucked up, right?
Right.
But if you have a friend that's not in your ex-Jehovah's Witnesses or your family or whatever relationship you have, and they do something awful and they cross your boundaries and they hurt you, and keeping away from them is a good thing for you. Not shunning them, but like just being like, "You know what, this is not gonna work. Let's just go on our separate ways." That's healthy boundary setting. That's different. Right. The whole Jehovah's Witness thing isn't healthy boundary setting. It's a form of control, so that's the main big difference between the two. And I'm pretty sure that some people will say, "Oh, if my kid became a dictator and killed a bunch of people, it's still unconditional love." Probably. You know? maybe that's right. But in general, right?
Right.
So, in relationships with other people,
mm-hmm.
there's gonna be boundaries. The boundaries set by us are not healthy boundaries. They're control tactics. And right. So they're meant to hurt you so you can comply, and that's not cool. So that's the main difference. But do I feel close to my ex-Jehovah's Witness friends? Certainly. Like, some of my best friends are ex-Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right.
You know, I have Betsy, who's one of my best friends. I have Joe, who's one of my best friends, and both of them I consider them my best friends. And I also have a friend, Carlos, who's like a brother to me. I have a friend that I grew up with who is not involved in any of Jehovah's Witness stuff. It just happens that he left, that he faded. I'm close to him. I have another friend that's the same way. And then I have people that have never been affiliated that I'm close with as well. I have a bunch of family that's never been Jehovah's Witnesses. I have nephews and nieces that never been Jehovah's Witnesses. I love them to death. It's a good thing.
That's great. Look, seems like you have a big entourage. Funny thing, quick story. What is, I'm going to do a solo podcast about this, is how I still keep, and that's a question I'm going to ask you later, soon later. Mm-hmm. I still keep a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know if I should call it principles. Some of them are, we're taught to only make Jehovah's Witnesses friends and not worldly people. So when I got out, it was hard for me to make friends. And when I did, I was me. But I made fun of and people did not accept me. So what did I do? I became someone else to be liked. And then later on, I realized I'm not living my life. I'm living a life for others to like me. So therefore, I had a thousand friends, let's say. Then when I became myself again, it got reduced under probably 5 people who really liked me regardless. And so my question to you is, have you kept any Jehovah's Witnesses principles in your life? As an example, this principle that I kept is, for me, and it's like weird because most of like the quote-unquote worldly world that we live in out here, people don't understand that. And until I tell them Jehovah's Witness, they get it. But if they don't know what Jehovah's Witness is either, they just think I'm a jerk, which they've told me, or they tell me I'm a bitch or I'm judgmental. I do not do any substance, and people don't understand that. So question is, what are principles that you learned from being Jehovah's Witness that you kept in your life till this day that works for you?
I'm just gonna say, number one, that substance thing. No.
Yeah.
You're missing out, bro. No, listen. You're missing out, man. Are you kidding me? But that's cool. Hey, man, to each their own. So this is the way I see it. I feel like the principles that I've kept, they're not only things that the Jehovah's Witnesses teach, because there are lessons that my mother took from the Bible, right, that would teach me with those lessons. So I'll give you an example. I was when I was a kid, a little kid, like 12 years old or 11, I would be very impatient for things. Like, oh, patience. And my mom was like, Reuben, what's the fruit of the spirit? And then she'd be like, love. And then she'd name them off. And then when she gets to Greek, she would say in Spanish, gran paciencia, which is great patience. Or
oh, yeah. The, yeah, I know what you mean.
Term? There's a term for it in English. I forget. I knew it. My mom dropped it.
Long-suffering?
Long-suffering. Thank you. So, in Spanish, long-suffering is translated in great patience.
Right.
So she would name them off, and then she'd be like, great patience? And she would drill that into my head. So, like, growing up, when I would encounter stuff, I would be like, all right, like, practice this patience thing. So I'll be in the doctor's office, I'm like 20, and I'm like, patience, just, you know, it's all good, you can wait for this, there's no hurry. So that's not exclusive to the Jehovah's Witnesses, right? But I just so happened to learn that, because that's a lesson that they extracted from a very ancient book that has both good and bad things, quote unquote, good and bad things. So harmful and not harmful things in it. This, just like any other book that is a religious text or something that's philosophical, you can get something from it. So I don't credit Jehovah's Witnesses, I credit my mother, for extracting the kindness out of the lessons of the Jehovah's Witnesses and try to teach me those kind things. And that's probably one of the reasons why I stayed in as long as I did, because that was my focus, not the fear, not the Armageddon, but the doing good to others and being kind to others. I like that stuff. Actually, one of the first public talks that I gave, they give you the outlines to pick, and I picked the ones, I picked two or three of them, and they all had to do with the same subject. I don't want to talk about preaching, I don't want to talk about Armageddon, I want to talk about, like, our relationships with our brothers, because I felt like those were the things that I like to talk about, so.
Awesome, that's great, and I call myself a great patient person, because I've had roommates, currently I have 4 people and 5 included me, and I've had living with housemates for the longest time, and I often call them my greatest teachers, and I often say, thank you, you're my teacher. And people don't understand that. They're thinking teacher means you go in school, but for me, they are helping me growing a lot, because living with people who are strangers or even with a partner is very, if you're humble, they're your teacher. And that takes a lot of patience, and it's for your own good too, because you can navigate in life more calmly. And I wanted to ask you about, do you have any Jehovah's trauma from being a Jehovah's Witness that you are healing from? or how are you healing from it, if any?
Trauma from the angels when us. It was not trauma. I wouldn't call it trauma because nothing really awful happened. I mean, the things that happened to me as Joe's witness could have happened to somebody else in another religion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The shunning really only, the only thing I lost from the shunning was people that I cared about who, but they weren't really family. So I'm very lucky in that sense. I mean, it did hurt. And there was loss. I think the quote-unquote trauma is more